Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively the Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. So tonight, I have my good friend Tamika with me. We're going to be talking about Superman, the movie, 1978. I was not born during this time because I was probably a sperm cell in my dad's ball sack. So let's go ahead, let's talk about Superman, the movie, and let's do this.
Hey, Tamika. Jeff, why did you have to say that? I was like
5 years old, or negative 10.
I was drinking my liquid IV, and you come out. You was sperm in your dad's cell, and I wasn't
even thought of.
Terrible. Hey,
I thought that was a great opening. I don't know.
Superman, John. Superman, they want to talk about sperm with Superman. That's Superman 2.
Might have some super, never mind. I'm not even going to go there.
Yeah, that's Superman 2. We say that for the second one.
Anyways, guys, welcome to the show. Today we're going to be breaking down Superman, the movie, 1978, starring Christopher Reeves, Jane Hackman. This movie holds a lot of nostalgic weight for me as a kid, renting this movie and stuff like that. But we're also going to go in here and break this down scene by scene. But before we do that, we have to talk about this nostalgically. And okay. I'm going to break it down to Tamika first. For nostalgic, best out of 10, where was the first time that you actually saw Superman the movie?
Probably on TV as a kid, but I didn't really see it all the way through because I really wasn't paying too much attention to it, but I knew of it.
Okay. So out of 10, where would you pull this as nostalgic for you?
Oh, as a kid or like?
Yeah.
Probably like a 7 from the scenes I did see.
Okay. Okay.
As a kid. Yeah.
Okay. I got you. You see, I remember renting the 4th one a lot as a kid. And I know that's like the horrible one that everybody talks about that sucks because it's like Captain Planet, but with Superman. Because he's trying to save the planet and stuff like that. But that was like the one that I remember renting a lot. With Superman the movie and stuff, I just remember nostalgically as a kid watching this. This was my first introduction into Superman in a way. I was actually imitating him, jumping off of containers in my playroom and stuff like that as a kid, imitating him. And also, you know, I also had the action figures of Superman as well. I had the punching bag of Superman where you can punch.
Dang.
Like Luthor fashion. I also had some other stuff with Superman. So nostalgically for me, I'm going to have to at least go like an 8.8. I've seen certain scenes of this like you did as a kid.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's some things that I think that I remembered and everything. But then after that, it's like, I think it's because of the fact that there's 4 movies here. And that's why I'm pretty much don't remember where the pieces fit.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, the first movie, we'll get into it in a few minutes, we get Zod at the very beginning of this movie. And then you don't see him anymore after that. Mm-hmm. So, that at first, I was thinking that Zod was actually the bad guy in the first one, but instead he's the second bad guy, the bad guy in the second movie. So we actually get introduced to Lex. So that was just me thinking after not seeing this for so long. Or anything like that either. So that's where I was. So now that I've seen it a bunch of years, times later on in my life, and now we're reviewing it, now I remember, okay, Lex is first, then Zod. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, nostalgically, at least an 8.8 for me.
Okay. I'm going to go off script, even though we don't have a script. Do you think they should have introduced Zod in the first one then instead of Lex?
I think everybody knew who Lex is. So he's the most common bad guy.
Yeah.
At least you actually have some groundwork with the very beginning of this of establishing who Zod is.
Yeah.
And that way you can go ahead and introduce him into the second movie. Think of it like this. It's kind of like a post-credits scene, but instead it's at the very beginning of this movie.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's the way I look at it. I look at seeing Zod as if we're watching a Marvel movie. So basically, if this was a Marvel film and we're just watching an origin story of Superman, if this was Superman done as a Marvel movie, for example, you know, you get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. This would actually be a post-credit scene.
Okay.
End-credit scene. Mm-hmm. Where we actually see, Clark's real parents basically sentencing them and things like that. That's what I was thinking.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, but yeah. So, guys, that's gonna be, it as far as us talking about this movie nostalgically, but now we're gonna break it down scene by scene. So, faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall plot holes in a single bound. Look up in the sky as a bird, as a plane, as a grown man wearing his underwear outside his pants. And somehow, we all just went with it.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird!
It's a plane!
It's Superman!
That's right, today we're flying faster than Clark Kent, changing in a phone booth. Back to 1978 when superhero movies were charming, heartfelt, and somehow involved Marlon Brando, making more money for 15 minutes of work than most of his will in a lifetime.
They can be a great people, Kal-El, they wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way.
So grab your capes, polish those glasses, and get ready to believe a man can fly, and maybe question a few fashion choices along the way. Because this is our Superman the movie review, and trust us, no kryptonite required.
I've got you.
You've got me! Who's got you?
So... Scene one.
Yeah.
Go into my notes here.
No kryptonite required.
Exactly. No kryptonite required.
Okay. I'm ready. I'm sorry.
Okay. The film consists of three major segments. So the movie begins on the planet Krypton. A danger of imminent destruction approaches. Scientist Jor-El condemns three Kryptonians villains, General Zod, Non, and Ursa, to the Phantom Zone. Later, he is unable to convince the Kryptonians about elders, about Kryptonians' impending doom, and promises them that neither he nor his wife, Laura, will attempt to leave this planet. However, he sends his infant son, Kal-El, to her to ensure his survival, just as Kryptonian begins to its death. Kal-El's spaceship crashes lands 3 years later in Smallville, Kansas, where the boy is found and adopted by a childless couple, Jonathan and Martha Kent, who named him Clark after Martha's maiden name. So, what did you think about the opening scene where we actually see Clark's, Kal-El's parents? I like the suits and the glowing of the S on this. I like how they did this in the 1970s without no green screen or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's all practical effects. So it looks like light up foil, tin foil. With S, and I like how we actually, they establish who these people are, and that there's also this big threat on their Earth, I mean, not on their Earth, but their planet, of Krypton, and it's Zod. It's these three people that are causing havoc on their planet, but also at the same time, you're also dealing with the destruction of their own planet, as well, but we don't have no background story as to why their planet is being destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, their planet's being destroyed. At least with Man of Steel, we established that Zod is the person that is basically moving these puzzle pieces.
Yes.
And he's, I want to say he's actually the person that destroyed Krypton because of the fact he didn't like the Kryptonians and what they were doing on Man of Steel. But this one, it's like, okay, are asteroids hitting this planet? What's going on here? Why is this? It's just, okay, well, we're in danger. We also sent these other people who are guilty of doing some bad stuff on our planet.
Yeah.
But we're going to send them off, and we're going to die.
Yeah. Yeah, so no correlation between the two. They just got trapped in a, I don't want to say Pentagon. I don't know why I say Pentagon. Anyway, they got trapped in this, whatever. My shapes are terrible tonight.
Basically.
But yeah, they just got trapped in that, which I thought was pretty cool for the special effects from the 70s. But the opening scene, I thought, was like Shakespearean play. It was like very masterpiece theater for me. Like It really does have that
Shakespearean type of style.
Like, because it's like the background is just solid black. And then you have him with his suit glowing and he's projecting in Shakespearean type way. For me, he was captivating. I think Marlon Brando set the stage for every Jor-El in the other Superman movies. And to me personally, the one that comes the closest to carrying the torch is Russell Crowe. Cause he captivated
Russell did a really good job.
Yeah, he captivated me just like Marlon Brando did. They have a lot of weight to their performances. Just like a benevolent father figure type thing. I don't know how else to describe it, but I thought it was pretty cool. The sentencing, I guess I got kind of distracted a little bit, you know, when they were in that
thing. Triangle or, yeah.
Whatever. They were in this. It's like they were sentencing them. They was like, I'm not guilty. You don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, I'm just following this thing.
I get what you're saying. It's that little spinning thing. That's twirling around them. No. Like a human lie detector.
Yeah. You will pay for what you've done. For audio, I'm waving my hands in front of my face. That's how it seems with you.
You know what it looks like? Remember those rides that we used to see in the mall? Remember that thing in the mall where you basically hang inside the ride and it twirls you around?
Yes.
That's what it looks like to me with that round circle thing.
Yes, exactly. That's what they were in. That thing in the mall. And they were being sentenced by Big Brother, which are them three faces that are isolated. And they had that again in Winter Soldier. You remember seeing Winter Soldier where they had those faces isolated and they were judging them?
Yeah,
anyway,
that's
how I felt about the first scene. I liked it, but it was distracting.
And then you have that one. It kind of looks like a meteorite to us that's coming down. So I like how it starts off like a star.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it looks like a meteorite hitting our Earth. And it's actually baby Clark coming down. And Martha and Ken are both of them are driving. And he crash lands over there. And then, Martha's like, well, we got to find out what's going on. And I like how, and then all of a sudden, Pa Kent just says, Martha, what are you talking about? They're going to do science experiments on them. We're going to have all kinds of people from agencies coming down here. And I like all of a sudden he goes into being a parent right then and there. No question about it. This is my son. We have to protect him at all costs. Hmm. We cannot let anybody know about who he is. So I like how he has that fatherly instinct right away. Of like, I have to protect this baby, even though this baby is not mine. And then also too, you also think about, Jor-El. He's probably calm now because of the fact that he actually has a family that he can look after. You know, that Clark's going to be okay as well with these people. And, you know, I'm just looking at it from a father's perspective. Mm-hmm. I like the care and the well-being of his fatherly instincts just kicking in right then and there. And then Martha's also trying to basically try to do the right thing, even though the right thing will cause them to have all kinds of government officials coming over there, taking the baby away, doing government experiment and stuff like that. But it seemed like to me, the husband was more self-aware of what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you
think? Yeah, I agree. Going back to Jor-El, now that you said that, that does frustrate me that I did not know what was the cause of their planet being destroyed. You know, but in the later movies, they put two to two together and told us why it was destroyed. But, I wrote down.
We don't find out until the second movie, now that I'm remembering, I think.
It was the second?
I'm not sure. I have to go back and rewatch. This is why we're doing our Superman rewatches anyways. So, okay.
Yeah, I wrote down like a little bit of what Jor-El told, his name wasn't Kent at the time, Kal-El.
Well,
it said, all I have, feel, learn, I bequeath to you, my son. And then he said like a bunch of other stuff too, but I thought, that part was really powerful to me. Like he's giving his son this like spiritual blessings, very Abrahamic in a sense that he's giving his son. And I don't know. I just wish they all as a family could have came to Earth. I wish there was, I know that there wasn't room, you know, it was just him in the pod, you know.
Well, it was just about the protection of his son. I getcha.
I know. I just hated to see the family torn apart. And
me too.
You know, that's just me. I just hated his family couldn't be there with him. But it's good he had a family on Earth. I just wish they all could have came together and taught him a lot more while they were trying to adapt to Earth too. I think that would have been interesting, but we wouldn't have had any purpose for Clark and, I mean, for Martha and.
Right. There wouldn't be any, because of the fact that we wouldn't have those values that Clark would actually get from Martha. And then because I look at it as like two different sides of the coin here.
Yeah.
You have the values and also the principles of the mother and father of the Earth. And then once you get into the other stuff with his father and then the Fortress of Solitude, you also have the way and the protection and the love of that father being. And you also have the knowledge of what he, of what they went through. So you have it on two different scales, which is something I really like as well.
Yeah. And also I too would have been like the dad. If a baby is lifting a truck, and my wife is like, oh, he's so cute, let's take him. I'm like, no, it's a demon baby.
We need especially to when run. He's growing at a rapid pace too.
I know. I'm like, wait, in Man of Steel, did he grow at a rapid pace too? Or he just came as a baby? Cause it's been a while.
He came as a baby. Okay. And then remember, we actually get to see how he spazzed out in class and stuff like that because he wasn't used to his superpowers and he's like that in Man of Steel. And then we also see a grown up Clark in Man of Steel flashing back to those events.
Yes. Okay. I remember now. Kevin Costner. Yeah.
Yep. Kevin Costner.
Which he filled the role too. Like, you know,
It was just a different way of how they did it.
This is like,
so we'll get into that later on because we are going to try and cover Man of Steel as well.
Yeah. I mean, this movie is like the blueprint for all the other Superman movies. And these are wonderful actors. They were, half of them are gone now in this Superman. But like Kevin Costner, Russell Crowe, they really feel those shoes well.
They definitely do. They actually have that father being where I'm like, I'm just, whenever they die off or something happens to them, you are actually invested. Even though they're in there for like maybe 5 to 10 minutes of the film, you're invested into their characters and that care and that love and the emotional attachment to them.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things I like about it, is the characterization of the characters that I really do love about them.
Yes. Agreed.
So now we're getting into Clark is no ordinary boy. He is incredibly agile and strong. But at the urging of his parents, he keeps his abilities hidden, frustrating accepting the ridicule and scorn of his peers as he assumes a mild-mannered temperament, fading into the background rather than becoming the star of the football team. But as Jonathan Kent reminds him, Clark was put on Earth for a reason, and it is not to score touchdowns. Unlike my small town who thinks everybody should score touchdowns, Clark then says, how about they race to the barn? How about a race to the barn, Dad? Unknown to Clark, his stepfather has been having heart problems and soon collapses of a mid-quarrel infraction and dies. At the funeral, Jonathan Kent, Clark feels guilty for not knowing what to do, despite the sudden quickness of his death, clamoring at the power, and he cannot save him. So, yeah. So, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the fact that, you know, he's getting bullied by everybody at school.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He doesn't have any friends. He's basically the towel boy, in a sense. But, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he's a towel boy or anything, but he's just getting picked on.
He literally is the towel boy.
Okay, he is. Which sucks because, you know, you're expecting Clark to be the one that's going to be the QB. You're expecting him to be the one to score the touchdowns. And especially with his athleticism and stuff like that, he's reserving himself, trying to be being taught in the ways of Martha and Pa Kent, and try not, even though he can snap these kids in half, he still doesn't do it or anything. He still winds up being that one person who's different from everybody else and doesn't snap. Because he could, but he doesn't. And then he winds up trying to race them with the race, the train and stuff like that too. And then, you know, there's a heartfelt moment of like, what am I here for? What's my sole purpose and self-identity? And he's like, am I just here to just score touchdowns? And I like how Pa Kent goes, no, you weren't here just to score touchdowns. You're here for a reason. We don't know that reason yet, but you're here for a reason. And then Clark's like, come on, Dad. I'll race you to the barn. Next thing you know it, he winds up dying of a heart attack.
Yeah.
And that would actually scar me because I was thinking, did I kill my dad because I made him run?
Yeah.
But, yeah. What did you think?
He killed him. I'm just kidding. I guess his power, he's still developing his powers because usually he could see through people's bodies to tell what their health condition is. So I guess in that moment his powers weren't developed that much. Like to that point, you know.
What
like,
I thought out of it was the fact that these are his parents.
Yeah.
And that he doesn't really want to, you know, be that person that will scan his own parents' bodies or anything like that. Because of that respect and boundary because of father and son and mother and son type of thing.
Yeah, I guess Lois is the exception.
Well, she's not family, but yeah.
But yeah, I felt for Clark. It has to be really frustrating to suppress your nature. And his nature is to be the most powerful being and to surpass all of our limitations. You know, he's like a god, you know. So that has to be hard to just consistently suppress that powerful nature within you just to blend in, knowing you never will blend in. Like, you know, when the guy knocked over all the equipment. When he was trying to ask the girl out, he's like, Clark, you still gotta clean that up. He's like, I did clean it up. Oh, okay. Like, it's like, he could have just like, froze that guy, but then the whole town would have jumped on him and been like, oh my God, he's an alien, help. I don't know, I just felt frustration for Clark.
I love the frustration of Clark though with that because he's just as frustrated as we are.
Yeah.
And it actually gives him some humanization within his own character too, that we might not see anything like this as an alien being who's on Earth. It's like, what the hell? I cannot fit into society. I cannot fit in with these peers. I get made fun of every day and I'm having to reserve myself and I'm also still trying to figure out what to do. So, you know, it cuts on all layers of what he's doing.
Yeah, and you have to give it to the creators of Superman because they were Jewish immigrants. So I can, thinking about it now, I can see their story being told through this. Like, not really fitting into society. They're immigrants. They're not from this society or planet or feeling like an alien. So I don't know. I mean, if the audience that we are talking to now, if they don't know about the background of Superman and their creators, it would be good to go back and read about their story. And then you'll kind of understand Clark a little bit more and how relatable it is, especially if you are an immigrant or you just a kid that don't seem like you fit in. Like, it's easy to attach yourself to that trope.
Exactly. And then, you know, then you have this funeral scene that gets set up. And I love the wide angle shot of this.
Me too.
Afterwards, like after the funeral and everything, I don't know if it's like a day or two after or whatever, but Martha comes up to Clark. He's out in the field. He goes, Mom, I gotta go. I'm like, what? Because it's like all of a sudden the funeral happens. It doesn't give you a timeline of how long his father's been dead. It's like all of a sudden, like the next day, it's like, Mom, I gotta go. Okay, I knew this moment was gonna happen, Clark. I knew this day. But where are you gonna go? North. Okay, you have a plan. But what? And he doesn't graduate high school? That's my first thought. I'm like,
he doesn't need high school. What are you talking about?
That's my first thought, though. I was like, I thought there would be like a graduation scene because in the third movie, you actually have a high school reunion happening with him and Lana because you actually see a little bit of Lana in the first movie.
Yeah.
As a cheerleader, but then you have a class reunion. So I'm like, okay, I guess Clark did graduate.
Yeah, I guess
so. Right.
Was this before he had that sense that something was calling to him? Was that like, after the funeral.
Yeah, it was right after the funeral. We'll get into that. Now if you want. But yeah, after a few months pass, Clark hears the call of a mysterious green crystal hidden in his parents' barn. He realizes that it is time to discover his purpose and bids an emotional farewell to his Earth mother. He soon departs on a journey to the Arctic and uses the crystal to build the Fortress of Solitude, a majestic crystal place in the architectural style of his home planet, Krypton. Inside, Kal-El learns the reason that he was transported to Earth and his crucial role on the planet from holographic recordings of his father. After 12 years of education and training within the Fortress of Solitude, he emerges, grabs in a red cape and blue bodysuit with the L family symbol on the chest and flies off.
Why, John? Why she have to describe it like this? He wearing a bodysuit. Okay.
I can't help what my notes have, okay? Like I'm writing a novel.
It's his ancestral garb.
Right.
He
has a S on his chest.
Yeah, for super.
I hope. I'm just kidding.
Yes, hope. Hope, John, hope. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Trying to find your purpose. You know, I have to go. I have to leave the comfort of home and I have to find my purpose, Mom. I'm sorry. I need to go. Like, that's deep. Like, I don't know. This movie is just so deep. There's so many deep levels that I can appreciate now as an adult, more so than a kid. But
because as a kid, right? We're wanting Superman. We wanting to see him fly. We want him to see him lifting things, saving people, stuff like that. We don't want that talk. We don't want none of that.
I don't want as a kid,
we don't want that. We just want him to fly. We don't care about a Pa Kent dying. But as a grown-ups, we're like, okay, this hits you on a lot more of an emotional scale compared to as a kid. Because as a kid, we're thinking as a kid, we're watching this movie and realizing, okay, we're not realizing that before we get to the Superman that we know, we have to be introduced into this character, the origin of that character, to see his growth and to see his arc transform.
Exactly. Because as a kid, you're like, oh, ooh, Fortress of Solitude. Oh, my God, he's going to fly. Like, that's all we care about.
Right.
We don't really care about, I'm trying to find my purpose in life. And these kids are bullying. I don't care about all this stuff. When is he gonna fly? Like the practical effects in this movie, they really push the story forward. Like it doesn't take you out of it. Well, except when Clark's running against the train, you can see the crane lifting him up like a puppet, you know. But
that part made me laugh a little bit. To be honest,
it was better than CGI. Cause you saw that CGI, you'd be like, kind of take me out of it. So you appreciate that they didn't really have CGI back then. They had to use what they had to make the story believable. You know, like when he's flying in the sky, like I forget that there's a green screen and they probably just land on the table somewhere doing this. It's like you really buy into the magic of it.
Right, because this is actually a movie that you have to believe that you can make a man fly.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I learned from watching, the Christopher Reeves well, you know what I'm talking about, the documentary.
Oh, where is
it? It's on Max.
Okay, cool. I'm going to watch that.
But yeah, they actually had to do this like in a single take.
Hmm.
So basically what they would do is where Christopher Reeve flies away as Superman and re-enters as Clark Kent was filmed in a single continuous take with no cuts. This was accomplished by using a technique called Doran's Zoom Optical Flying Rig, which allowed them to create the illusion of flight without Reeve actually flying. So.
Oh, okay. Cool.
But yeah, that's a little small trivia thing that, you know, I wanted to talk about. But, you know, I like how it goes into the crystals. I like how, for the effects in 1978,
yep.
to see that rise from the water.
Yeah.
This Fortress of Solitude was something amazing.
Yes.
And then him being taught everything from his background and how, who he's supposed to be and understanding his purpose and realizing he's been there for 12 years. That is mind blowing because to us, he's just got there.
Yeah.
To him, time is works differently for him, I guess, because of how rapidly he's growing. So 12 years to him is probably, you know, what's the thing, like limitless in a sense.
Yeah.
So I like that whole entire thing is like 12 years is a long time for us, but for him, it's not. And then it goes in from him being a teenager to a man. And then we get into the Metropolis stuff, but is there anything else that you wanted to capture as far as the Fortress of Solitude, Marlon Brando showing back up again, or anything like that?
I just think it's brilliant for the time. Just it's smart, too, like going into a Fortress of Solitude and hibernating and learning everything you can about your home planet and your powers. And I think that matured him in a way. Like he knows, okay, so I have these powers and I know how to use them, but mixing that with what I learned from my Earth parents, I'm going to combine the two. So he had like this real education, like very valuable education within his Fortress of Solitude, hibernating. And then he came out like, okay, now I have to disguise myself as a human. Even right. though he probably didn't need a job, but and money and bills, but he's like, if I want to blend into this society, I need to appear normal so I can save these people. Cause I guess if, I don't know, I guess if he came, like if he never was Clark and he just kind of appeared as Superman, I wonder how different the movie would have been. Without Clark, just, oh, it's this guy, Superman, and he's gone. Like, I don't know. I guess understanding.
I think it loses the humanization of who he is.
Yeah, human relationships he wouldn't have. Yeah.
And therefore, we cannot relate to him on a human aspect of it.
Yeah. Yeah, he would really be an alien. You're right.
Right. Well, he is an animal, but you know,
I mean, he would be like Zod. You know, Zod, it just kind of came out of nowhere.
Right, with no humanization.
Yeah. He,
no care, no remorse for anything. No moral compass.
Yeah. Okay, you're right.
I don't, Clark, yeah.
I don't want a dark Superman. You're right.
Well, we're going to get a dark Superman.
It's I understand. I mean, like, in this Superman. First one, just coming out of nowhere, and he's, like, just walking, like, like, oh, my God, no, he's an alien. It's like, who are these puny humans, you know? It'll just come out like that.
Right.
Oh, boy.
So now we get Clark returns to civilization, arriving to in the city of Metropolis, although not attired in a brown suit and horn-rimmed glasses. He's hired as a reporter for the Daily Planet newspaper by his editor-in-chief, Perry White. While there, he meets teenage photographer Jimmy Olsen and the paper's star journalist, Lois Lane. Clark becomes immediately infatuated with Lois, but is unable to properly gain her affection while in the bumbling guise of Clark Kent. However, when Lois boards a helicopter which malfunctions and is about to send her to her death, Clark shows his true nature. He runs away from the crowd of shocked onlookers and into the archetypical phone booth, where he duns in the blue suit with the L family chest and flying to rescue Lois. And yeah. Can I just talk about this? I love how we have this thing where we're seeing Jimmy Olsen for the first time. We're looking into the lens of his camera and in his POV, which I thought was really cool for a 1978 look. Cause it has like that Peter Parker kind of feel to it.
Exactly.
A little bit. I love that kind of filmography, right there, the cinematography for that. I thought that was pretty cool. And then seeing Lois for the first time with her smile, and then you see Perry talking to Clark and stuff like that. And, you know, she goes, well, I'm a reporter too. He goes, not like, I'm like, okay, Perry, you're kind of being sexist here because Clark just shows up and you're automatically going to give him the big news story. You know, after she's been there for a long time.
1978, what you want?
Golly, Mr. White, thank you.
Yeah, right, 1978, what you want?
Right. But I do like the fact that, you know, this is actually the Perry White that I like, where he's quick-witted. He is that mean-struck journalist boss that wants things done right away. And don't get me wrong, I like Lawrence Fishburne as Perry, but, you know, I like this version. I don't know. There's just something about him where he's like, I want this thing done at X amount of time. Lawrence Fishburne's like, I just made money off of The Matrix.
Yeah.
You guys can do whatever you want. Basically,
J.K. Simmons could have played both roles. He played Spider-Man boss and his boss because they both are the same person.
Pretty much. But yeah. I do like this version of Perry, though.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Lawrence Fishburne was like a mellow version. He was like, Clark, I want this done, and I want it now. Instead of, Clark, I want this done, I want it now. What's your names and paper? You know, stuff like that.
Exactly. This is what he says, though. Now look, the post, it flies. The news, look, Ma, no wires. The Times, blue bomb buzzes Metropolis. The planet, Kate Wonder, Sun City. Then I want the name of this flying, whatchamacallit, to go with the Daily Planet. Like bacon and eggs, Franks and beans, and death and taxes, politics and corruption.
Yes.
And who's talking cheap? I'm gonna make him a partner if that's what it takes.
Yes.
A good reporter makes them great. He has some great lines though, but like, I understand.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple $1,000s in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/affirmations or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/affirmations.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting.
It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
You Olsen, a boring banquet, and you bring me 3,000 boring pictures. Yet Superman saves a man from drowning on a Third Avenue this morning while you stand there watching the whole thing, and you don't even bring me one picture? So, yeah.
Yeah, I get it now. He's very snappy. And Lawrence is just quiet and tense. You know.
Like, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, he's like, I want this done. I want it now. But it's like Morpheus talking to you. Like, right. It just doesn't match.
I agree. And then, also too, you also see that other scene where Clark and Lois are walking down the street. They get the guys holding him at gunpoint. Clark moves the gun away. And he's like, look, sir, I know we're at troubled times, but you know, you don't have to point the gun at me. And he's like, listen, son, I don't care. I'm going to take this woman's purse right after I get done taking care of you. Hmm. And Lois winds up just kicking him in the nuts or in the face, and he doesn't take no for an answer. And then you have the pretty much Clark jumps up in the middle of it, the gun, while he's getting ready to shoot Lois, saves her, and then acts like he fainted.
Yes, it was done very smoothly. That's one of my favorite parts too. Like, just how the Christopher Reeve's acting, the way he can be Clark and Superman in the same scene, and it's just little nuances that he does. You know, he's like, oh, and like, you know, he shrugs his shoulders down, like, oh my God, sir, please don't, you know, point that stir right thing. And then he's like, oh, Lois, save yourself. He's going to kill us. Oh, you know, stuff like that. And then when she ain't looking, he's like, shoulders up and catch the bullet quickly. And then he's like, oh, I fainted. You know, it's like.
I like how he has that smirk on his face too. Like, he's got the bullet.
He
like,
looked at us. He broke the fourth wall. Did you see that?
Yeah,
he broke the fourth wall. He's like, y'all saw that shit? Yeah, I did it. I was like, ooh, he looked at us. I was like, we saw it. Okay, we won't tell him. We won't tell him. It was like a secret. Like, we got his secret.
Don't tell anybody.
We won't tell Lois. Okay, you're right. You're doing great.
Then we have that scene, too, that plays out where now she's up in the helicopter. Hmm. And he winds up saving her, and I thought it was pretty good still, but you can definitely tell it's a toy model kind of thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
But I do like the fact that, you know, you had the montage of him saving everybody.
Yeah.
I love the montages. After he saves Lois, he's like, okay, now it's time for me to save everybody else.
Yep.
But what was your initial thoughts whenever you saw the helicopter go awry and then you see him try and save her?
Gosh, I drew a blank on that scene. I guess because he's just been saving her so many times. I'm like, what's the difference?
I got you.
He's always in trouble.
You're right.
But
you know, for me as a kid. Yeah,
go ahead.
For me as a kid and as an adult, you already know that she's going to get saved. But it's that sudden drop of her letting go of the helicopter and seeing her drop all the stories, down.
Yeah.
And you're seeing Superman fly up as she's falling down. And then you see the helicopter. It's like, okay, how is this going to work? Then he winds up taking one hand and also taking her and putting her back on the helipad and everything. Awesome. And then she puts the helicopter up.
Yeah.
So I thought, I still like it and everything. I still like that scene. I also like the scene where the burglar is actually trying to steal the diamonds and stuff like that as he's walking up the building with it in like Tom Cruise fashion from Mission Impossible.
Yeah, I like all those montages where he's like just coming in, saving the day, putting his name out there. I'm like, okay, now it's time for me to establish myself as Superman now. Like, he got like two jobs. Like, he got his job at the Daily Planet, and then he got his other job where he's Superman. Like, it will be hard to keep the two separate at some point. They will collide.
Right.
Like, even a god like him can't multitask all the time, you know?
No, trust me, he wore himself out.
Yeah.
I know I keep on jumping to the other movies. But, when Lois and I think it's like the fourth movie, where Lois is trying to have lunch with Clark, and she's trying to set up an interview with Superman. Then you have Perry's daughter, Perry's daughter is trying to meet Superman. He's over there trying to play both angles at the same time.
Yeah. Can't do it. Even Superman can't multitask, so that should make me feel better, right?
Exactly. If Superman can't do it, we can't do it.
No, and he's a god.
Exactly. But I still love the phone booth scene of him coming out of the phone booth and stuff like that. But of course, there's no phone booth. He comes out of the little spindle. You know what I'm talking about. The entrance. Yeah. I like how he winds up coming out of that, and then he goes up and saves. I don't know how many times I actually tried to spin myself around in that thing once as a kid.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking that I was going to be able to do what he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then come out in your bodysuit with your underwear on top of your bodysuit.
People would probably want to send me into a mental institution if I did that. But anyways, following a series of incidents in which Clark, in his yet unnamed guise, comes to the rescue and saves the day, Perry White issues to all his reporters to find out as much information as possible about this mysterious hero. Lois receives an invitation to meet someone at her place, signed only a friend, because he winds up telling her that when he saved her, that she goes, "Who are you?" "A friend," and then flies off. So he arrives at her place, telling her about Krypton. He displays one of his powers, X-ray vision, when he warns her about the dangers of tobacco, but reassures her that there is still time to quit, as he sees she has healthy lungs. Impressed with this, she asks him if he can tell the color of her panties. He says he cannot do this, thinking he is being gentlemanly. But he also winds up telling her that he cannot see through things because of the fact that everything is wooden, basically. He says he cannot do things. Okay, so Lois gives him permission to look at her underwear. But he says he literally cannot, as she is standing behind a planter made of lead. That's what it is, lead. Which has a counterbalancing effect on Krypton powers. Lois joins him on a flight over Metropolis, ascending to see how fast he can go. After their romantic flight, they consumed. Hera flies off, and Lois says to herself, "What a Superman!" Then pauses and says, "Superman," thus giving the mysterious name his name. He returns to her place as Clark and feels he should reveal himself, only to decide at the last minute that this is a bad idea and proposes a great date with Lois by going out for a burger. So, a lot to unpack, but I do like the fact that, you know, she winds up getting this note from someone, as Perry's actually trying to say, "Hey, look, we need to find out who this person is. We need to find everything else about him." And then she winds up getting the story. So it's like, okay, Clark got this big other story that he has, but he's giving her the story that Perry wants someone to have. So he's allowing her, because he trusts her, for the story, because to be able to lay down the truth and be able to tell her everything that she needs to know.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. I like the idea of a friend, and then he's coming over. At first she's thinking that she got stood up,
mm-hmm.
and then he comes in, and then you have that whole entire, that stuff with being played out with the whole panties and stuff. What did you think?
Oh my God. It was like being an awkward third wheel on a date. I was like, just sleep together already. Get it over with. And then, like, imagine being a kid and you hearing all this, like, "What color panties am I wearing?" Like, what kind of film is this? This is a porno.
It's like,
this is the beginnings of a porno. What color panties am I wearing? I don't know. Pink? Ooh, yeah. Then I'm
like waiting
for the music. Oh God. But yeah, I thought that was a pretty good exclusive that he gave her. You know, she was asking him, like, "Do you eat?" But then she was trying to say something else. I think she wanted to know how big he was, but he's like, Do you eat? And he's like, yes, but he can read her mind, right?
No, he can't read her mind. That's like the only thing he can't do.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Well, if he could, he'd probably be blushing like, oh, Jesus.
He's not telepathic, but you can definitely tell he likes toying with her.
I can see that. Yeah, I can see that a lot. Just making her blush and make her feel uncomfortable, and then he get uncomfortable. And oh my gosh, yeah, it was just awkward. It was like,
he's like, do you like pink? He goes, yeah, I like pink. Do you like pink, Lois? Yeah, I like pink too.
I was like, oh my gosh, is this day over with? I'm like, can y'all just go in the bedroom and just
Catherine development, Mika.
Just get it over with. Just like talk about a woman's panties. But yeah, anyway, when they flew, I thought that was pretty cool. It was really magical. It's like had her hover above around the Statue of Liberty and seeing all those shoots and just how far he had her go, like it was like to the moon, right? Like almost,
almost to the moon,
like in this almost to space. And I'm like, can she breathe?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering too. Like now that I'm an adult, is like,
yeah, the higher the altitude, I'm like, is she? And of course,
Iron Man couldn't even breathe in his iron suit.
Yeah, how did she do it? I mean, maybe he has some kind of power where humans can breathe if they touch him. I don't know. I'm just filling in the plot hole. But I thought that scene was really magical to see those practical effects. You know, it felt real to me. And I commend the filmmakers, especially back then. You kind of miss how films used to be made before the CGI took over everything. Just how much practical effects can really drive a story and make it just as magical and real. You know?
Agreed. Like, it can be oversaturated with CGI to the point where it takes you out of it. Totally. You forget that you're even invested into this movie and stuff like that too. So I like the fact of that. I like practical and CGI together versus it being all CGI.
Yeah. And I like the one, practical part that they put in it where, you would think if you're flying that high, you run into a bird. Like they ran into one bird, but, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's what would happen if you are flying, you'll run a series of birds and I'm just going to take a left turn for a minute, but it's going to relate to Superman. Okay. So it reminded me of, House of Dragon. So House of Dragon, Amon, took Vhagar and was claiming her. And she rolled in the sky with him, but it was a lot more dangerous than with Superman and Lois because they had multiple birds. It's like seagulls. She's like, it was like they showed the dangers of, oh, this is what would happen if you actually flew in the sky. Like you have birds coming at you trying to attack you and then you got the wind and everything else. Like the Superman ride was calm, but in House of Dragon, they actually showed me what Superman would have gone through.
Right.
Like birds, seagulls. I got you.
Well, speaking of birds, we even had that one scene where like lightning strikes the airplane and Superman's over there, saving the day, pretending to be an engine.
Yeah. Your pilot was like, you don't even want to know.
Just fly.
Just fly. And he's just like, hi, guys.
Guys. But I do want to mention this, though, with the, I do like how whenever when Lois first gets saved, he goes, it's okay. I got you. You got me, but who's got you? So I like that, that moment as well of her being shocked by the fact that someone is flying. And now it just becomes the norm. Now, because now she expects him to be flying and stuff, and she gets the exclusive interview that she's always been wanting, and it's called A Night with Superman.
Mm.
And I like that moment of like, you know, Clark decided to do something nice for her. Mm-hmm. And yes, they flirted. Yes, he ended up giving her a tobacco warning package label from Marlboro Lights.
And she never smoked again, did she?
I don't know. And then, well, she would probably want to after she got that flying with him. But then, you know, the flirting back and forth. And I like how we had that moment of where he wants to reveal himself after he knocks on the door.
Yes.
And she says, well, let me go get my purse. And it's like, hey, Lois. And his voice changes.
Yes.
And his body is like, yep. This.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That nuance Christopher Reeves does where he goes in and out of two different characters is amazing to me.
He pulls it off really well.
Yes.
And he's so charming. He is just the perfect embodiment of who Superman is.
And it's so weird how Christopher Reeves was brilliant because I believed him as Clark, even though I knew that was Superman. Isn't that weird? It's like, I'm like, this nerd.
Even when he's talking as himself, I'm picturing
the
Clark
voice
talking.
Everything, the voice, the body language. He has the same hairdo as Superman. He couldn't have changed that same hairdo as Superman. But for some reason, I forget that that's Superman. And I see Clark.
Same here.
Amazing.
Okay, so now we're going to be introduced to Lex Luthor.
Oh, boy.
Meanwhile, arch-criminal Lex Luthor is intent on committing the greatest real estate swindle of all time. Hmm. With the unwitting aid of the U.S. government, BIA, the test launching of two ICBMs, Luthor intends to cause a major earthquake in California by using the missiles, one of which he has programmed to hit the San Andreas fault. Hmm. Originally, Luthor wanted both missiles to strike, but his assistant, Otis, goofed the programming on the first missile, to which Lex says he will use that as a divisionary tactic instead. The quake will cause most of the California to slide into the ocean, killing millions of people while simultaneously making the base tracks of worthless desert land that Lex Luthor had quietly purchased skyrocket in value when it becomes the new West Coast of the United States. Also, we also get the Otis City as well.
Mm-hmm.
Later on. But I do like the fact that we're getting introduced to Lex. And then you also, before that, you also have these cops that's following Otis and going into this underground lair into the tunnels in the subway. Mm-hmm. And one of the cops winds up getting killed. I like how I could just imagine this for the first time when someone says Lex Luthor, because they even mentioned Lex Luthor. I could just imagine if we were in 1978, you and I, like, oh my God, they said Lex Luthor. And we're just glued into our seats at this moment because we know who he is from the comics, mm-hmm. and we're interested to see what Gene Hackman is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I got out of that, was like the excitement of seeing the villain, the person behind the curtain of who's doing all this stuff.
Yes.
And Otis is stupid.
Very.
As well. He's like the worst person to have on the team.
Yeah. He is. Yeah. Your first introduction to Lex Luthor is him committing murder. He's like, who is this guy? And I thought the door was going to open. You know, when the cop was pressed against the door to the lair, I thought it was going to open and he falls back. And I'm like, oh, God. Oh, no. It's like, he's like, huh, that takes care of that. And then I forgot the woman's name, but she was like, Lex, that's awful. With her giant breasts.
Yeah.
That we get the very Bond girl, giant breasts on display. And I'm like, it's so awful, but you're still here. Yeah, that's our first introduction. He committed murder on screen. And then we see him. He's like, well, that's that. I'm like, oh my God, this guy's evil.
But yeah, we actually get to see how evil he is. We actually get to see the real estate stuff that he's pulling from everybody. And even Perry White himself is wondering, why is somebody buying up all this land in Nevada, this empty desert? Why would anybody want that? Mm-hmm. And I like how Clark winds up responding, I don't, golly, Mr. White, I sure don't know. Thank you, Clark. Thank you. I do appreciate that. But yeah, but I do like how Gene Hackman's just totally invested into this character. The point where there's not, it's not Gene Hackman anymore.
No.
It's Lex.
It's Lex.
And he does a fantastic job.
Oh yeah. Yeah. R.I.P. Yeah. I mean, just looking at him in this film, it made me miss him even more.
Same.
Know? Yeah. It's just really brilliant. But yeah, I mean, that's how real estate moguls are anyway, right? Aren't they just Lex Luthor?
Yep, pretty much. That's and, pretty much what these billionaires are. I mean, Lex Luthor.
I mean, all I saw was a plan that somebody is doing now, probably. They're probably like, how do we know the earthquakes aren't caused by these missiles?
Right. Because even they, we'll get into that in a minute, whenever he winds up telling Superman his plan, and then, of course, why California has earthquakes and stuff.
How do we know there is no Lex Luthor out there now, and we right, think exactly. oh my god there's a lot of earthquakes happening. I'm like, I would check the real estate moguls.
Check the real estate listing, see if there's not anybody trying to purchase anything out in Nevada right now.
They just need to stay on it, I'm telling you.
Exactly. There's something mysterious going around, just like Superman's fame rapidly spreading. Luther perceives him to be a serious problem, luring to his lair with a phony threat to gas the population of Metropolis. Having succeeded in his attention, he traps the superhero with a piece of kryptonite, the only thing to which he is vulnerable to. However, Superman effects an escape with the help of Luther's assistant, Eve Tressmacher, I think that's how you say her name, who is both attracted to Superman and frightened for the fate of her mother, who happens to live in Hackensack. And so we also forgot to mention how he stole the kryptonite and everything too, because remember, he winds up, Lex and them, just whenever they were doing that whole entire plan with the missiles, they disguised themselves.
Yes.
Lex disguises himself as like a cowboy. You also have Otis that's disguised as something else. And then you have the woman do your job that I'm like, really, Lex?
Yeah, because Otis, he was supposed to put in a series of codes.
Right. He was supposed to put in the coordinates.
Yeah, coordinates. Yeah. And then he was off by one, or he put it on the wrong one, which I don't fault Otis for that. That's a lot of information.
Like, yeah, I couldn't even handle that, and I have ADHD. I'll be there like for the whole entire 8 hours.
He better be glad he got at least one rocket right. Right. I had them all wrong. Like, where are they all going?
I'd be like, you know what? I'll just Christmas tree it and see what happens.
Yeah. But I thought just, I know they have to wrap the movie up, you know, just hurry up and get to the plot. But I thought it was very matter of fact. Like, Lex Luthor just was like looking in a book, and he was like, oh, okay, well, there's Krypton in, Addis Baba, Saudi Arabia, somewhere like that. And it was found, and that's where it is, and that's where we need to go get it. And I was like, huh? You just looked in a book. I'm like, oh, okay, that's where the kryptonite is. Case closed. Okay, let's go get it. That could have been stretched out a little bit more, but it's like a minor thing.
Well, it's like, you know, Natural Geographic for our villains.
Yeah, he was really smart. He read National Geographic.
Come on, you have a globe. You have like a swimming pool and all that stuff.
You got a library in there.
Yeah, he's got, and like he told his girlfriend, he goes, come on, you want to go back up there? Look at everything we have down here.
Yeah, and she just put the sun lamp on.
Or the lava lamp. But... With Superman's fame rapidly spreading, Luthor perceives him to be a serious problem, luring to his lair with a phony threat to the guests. Okay, so what about this? You have him who perceives him to have, like, a serious problem, and he lures him into the lair with a phony threat to the ghastly population. But the only, like, and then, of course, you know, with the whole entire thing with Hackensack, it's like, his main concern is the fact that Lois is in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, because remember, that's when we have that whole entire scene, like I mentioned before, where Clark comes in, she's in Nevada.
Yeah.
This is also happening at the same time as him confronting Lex.
Yeah.
And she's like, by the way, you need to save my parents in Hackensack. Then I'll save you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, woman, he's not even here for you. He's going to go ahead and save Lois and forget about the people in Hackensack.
And I didn't see him go there.
Nope. I didn't. He went, goes, yeah, I promise. I'll save them.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I did think that plot was kind of genius, though. It's like explaining his grand plan to him and the map, and then you got Otisburg, and he's like, erase that. You're embarrassing me in front of Superman, dumb idiot. And then he's like, you know, where did you hide the missile thingamajigger? And he's looking around, and he's like, you're trying to trick me. It's in this lead box and it's kryptonite. Bah, surprise. That's when Lex is really brilliant. Cause he's thinking he's looking for a device and he doesn't even know that there's kryptonite that's coming. And it's around his chest. And like you said, dump some in the pool and promise the woman, you save my mom, I'll save you. And then she's like, okay, well, I'm going to get my kids from Superman.
And I'm going to get does.
Yeah. She's like,
why would you do that?
Yes, yeah, like,
because I never think that I would.
Oh, yeah.
He does wind up saving her parents, like you promised.
When?
Which is why he was late saving Lois.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, Superman keeps his promises and diverts the path of the Hackensack missile first, forcing it into space. In the meantime, the California missile hits the San Andreas Fault, triggering the massive earthquake Luthor had intended. The length of the fault is diverted by the initial quake, but Superman prevents the catastrophic landslide. Luthor attended by purging deep into the earth to shore up the fault line. However, the quake's violent aftershocks still cause massive damage that creates multiple disasters as he builds a natural dam from rocks and boulders to stop the flooding causing by the branching of the Hoover Dam. Superman realizes that he has forgotten about Lois. He discovers her car falling into a crescent that opens up behind it and closed again, trapping her inside and causing her to be dead.
That was shocking.
Because it makes it look like Superman failed.
Yeah. Isn't that shocking? Like to you're being introduced to Superman and they're showing him failing. Can you imagine how visceral that is as a kid to see that? And like, oh my gosh, you're dead? What kind of movie is this?
It's kind of like that thing from Robin Hood Men in Tights. Like, wait, I lose? Let me see the script.
I know, right? I'm like, oh no. And the scream he let out was so gut wrenching. Like, oh, if I didn't say that bitch's parents.
As he was turning the, making the world turn around. But man, I felt the hurt.
I did too.
That's one of the things I have to say. That pain that he felt, knowing that he failed, saved somebody, especially someone he loves and cares about.
Yeah.
And knowing the fact that, and he even has that moment of two where it's like when he ends up questioning, well, why couldn't I save my dad?
Yes.
And then he's like, well, I can do something about this.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do anything to save my dad. But at least I can do this. So he winds up saving Lois and redeeming himself as someone that he can save somebody with doing something like this. Because he can't help anybody with, like, health problems or anything like that, but at least he can try and do something for the people he loved by bring someone back like that for a couple of minutes later, early. So, you know.
Let me tell you something, John. If a man don't turn the world around, turn back time for me. I don't want him.
That needs to be a t-shirt. If a man can't turn the world around for me, I don't need you.
We need to go all the way. I want to hear, and then like turn back and then like, hey, Tamika, what's up? I mean, that's powerful, right?
Yeah, he like flies into the upper atmosphere and does this.
Yeah, he turned time back, and then you wonder what kind of consequence that has. Like in movies preceding that, when somebody alters time, it has consequences. But I guess this one, it didn't, and they didn't really think about that. But yeah, they didn't really touch back on. I guess that's when Richard Pryor came. I guess that was.
That would be at part three.
That's the consequence. To turn back time and Richard Pryor.
If I can turn back time. Okay.
That's the consequence. Richard Pryor came. Oh, terrible.
But yeah. Okay. That would be funny though. Like all, the cause of every all these other movies to happen is because of the fact that he turned the world around.
Yep. That's what happened.
That's pretty cool. I like that theory.
Yo, put it on Reddit.
You need to. But yeah. But yeah, he prevents the Hoover Dam burst and fixes the faults in the line in such a way that, but also too, you also have Jor-El that's actually forbidding him to do this as well.
Yeah. Cause so he's listening to the heart. Come out.
I'm about to go deep a little bit.
Okay.
He's basically listening to Pa Kent and not, Jor-El. At this moment. He has that embodiment of his father, Pa Kent, versus Kal-El. That human aspect that it's basically like a way I'm picturing it, his father's like AI where no emotion.
Oh my God.
That's basically what I'm picturing him because he doesn't understand from a human aspect. Whereas Clark and Superman, he understands from a human aspect because he's living out on the planet with them. So therefore he understands the human emotion as opposed to, his father. He doesn't understand it. Mm-mm. So therefore he's able to, that's why he's able to understand.
Yeah. I mean, he really didn't listen to his parents at all, to be honest. In the second movie, he didn't listen. Third one, he probably didn't listen. Fourth, he probably didn't listen. He's just becoming more human.
But then we actually have the reversal stops at the point of the earthquake began. He then flies back to Lois, who is alive, and Superman bids farewell and flies off with a task to finish. Jimmy Olsen then mentions that it is fortunate that Clark is never here to see Superman. It is at that moment only that Lois suspects that Superman and Clark may be the same person, only to dismiss it as the silliest idea. Superman captures Luther and his henchman Otis, just as they're about to be execute Eve for her disloyalty. Both villains are delivered to prison. The prison warden thanks Superman for his efforts, while Superman modestly demurs, insisting that we're all part of the same team before flying off, ending the movie.
Yeah. So, now, how many times did he turn time back? Because he once. Had poor time management. How do we know?
He has ADHD like I do.
How do we know it wasn't more than once?
I think it's just more than, I think it's less than once.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just for a couple of minutes to save Lois. And I also like how when you're seeing him looking at Lois, alive, and he's over there waving, and we're getting that POV shot of how Lois is looking at him through the lenses of her car.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that moment. Then of course, Jimmy, mentioning the fact that Clark has never ran when Superman's here, and then Lois is also can't be. And of course, and then she decides to be suicidal at the second movie, trying to prove that Clark is Superman.
Man, I told you how I feel about this second movie.
Right.
They gotta stay tuned.
But what did you think of overall with the ending and stuff like that?
I thought it was a nice ending. It probably would have been more heart wrenching if he didn't turn back time and Lois just died. And I don't know what he probably would have been dark Superman. So I think it's best if he turned it time. I don't know. I got so many theories in my head. Like, what if he didn't turn back time and she died? And what was the consequence of doing that? Like, because every action has a consequence.
Right.
And we just said the consequence was these movies.
That's our theory. That's not factual.
It is factual.
No, it's not.
And Richard Pryor.
But still, I have to say, like, now stripping away the nostalgia and everything, I'm going to give this at least a 9.5.
Yes, I agree.
9.5 for me. Yeah. I love it. It has so many deep layers to it. The father and son aspect, the mother aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Someone falling in love for the first time with somebody else.
Finding so,
it's really good. I have to say it's one of my, I would have to say Superman 1 is actually one of my favorites going into this right now. I don't know how I rank them as we go, but yeah, Superman the movie is hands down one of my favorites with Christopher Reeves. So yes. You said a 9.5 as well.
Yeah. And Gene Hackman is a genius. And I really believed he was this slimy, grimy guy, but he played those roles very well.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Knew how to play those roles really well.
Yeah, R.I.P.
But yeah, I think that's everything that we wanted to talk about as Superman the movie goes. We will be doing our Superman rewatches. Stay tuned for more dates as to when we're going to do the other ones, the other three. By the way, guys, I'll be back again on Wednesday night, 8:30 Central Time, 9:30 Eastern Time, to do our Last of Us Episode 3 review with Dawn and myself. So go ahead, smash that like button, smash the subscribe button, guys. And remember, don't always turn back time. You might wind up getting a Richard Pryor in a Superman movie.
Yep.
So, all right, guys. Thanks. Bye, guys. Have a great safe time.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.